In a traumatic brain injury, initially there's an inflammatory process. And then, of course, there's oftentimes one of the most common complaints that patients have with brain injuries is they have a headache, they have pain. And anytime that you have pain, it stimulates the nervous system to wake you up. And you have to be able to sleep in order to have that restorative process for your body. And if you don't sleep, your pain threshold is not going to improve. You're going to continue to have pain. So that's one of the first things that that obviously has to be addressed.
There is always hope, and you are not alone.
Hi, I'm Christabel Braden, and this is my brain injury podcast, Hope Survives. Here we share information, education, and support for the brain injury community. This is an uplifting podcast to bring hope to your darkest days. As a survivor of traumatic brain injury and multiple concussions, I know what it's like to struggle to find hope. I don't want anyone to feel as alone as I did, and that's why I started my online community called Hope After Head Injury. This podcast is an extension of that, and I'd love to invite you to join along as we explore the realities of life with brain injury, with messages of encouragement, interviews with doctors and professionals, and survivor stories. No matter where you're at on your journey, there is always hope.
With a little hope, you can make it through today. With a little faith, someday you'll get through the pain. Just a little love is enough to light the way through your darkest night. Hope survives. Hope survives.
Welcome back to Hope Survives Podcast. Today we have one of our most highly requested topics. After season one, I put out a post online and I asked, what are some things you'd like to see in season two? I also put out a call to action on the podcast for you all to email me what you want to know. And so many people asked me to do an episode about sleep. So many people have said that sleep has been one of the things that has been most affected since their injury, and they wanted more information about it. And so because of you all, I did some digging, I talked to some people, and I found this doctor, Dr. Roy Wilkins, to speak to us. He was actually recommended to me by Dr. Jeremy Schmo from the Functional Neurology Center. So Dr. Schmo connected me with Dr. Wilkins. Dr. Wilkins is an expert in sleep medicine. He has his MD in neurology and his doctor of chiropractic. He's trained in chiropractic neurology, and he has been exclusively working in sleep medicine for, I want to say, over 15 years for a while. He has been practicing medicine since the early 80s, and he is also a traumatic brain injury survivor himself. So he had his TBI in 1998, and after that, he personally experienced how restoring sleep helped his brain to heal. And because of that, he got into sleep medicine. So today is part one of his interview. Yes, that's right. We have two episodes with Dr. Wilkins, and that's because our conversation went a little over an hour, and I thought it would be best for us to split it into two parts. And so make sure you're subscribed, because today where he's going to share some of his personal experience with brain injury, information about the importance with sleep, and how sleep can be affected after brain injury. He's going to talk about different suggestions for helping with sleep and how sleep in the autonomic system is affected and just sleep in the brain in general. Now, next week, is going to be more of the specifics, getting to the root cause, trouble falling asleep, trouble staying asleep, explaining what a sleep study is, talking about sleep hygiene and habits. And so this week is kind of our general overview. And next week, we're going to get into more of the specifics. So make sure that you are subscribed and stay tuned for today's episode and next week's episode as we together learn about sleep. Now, I also wanted to say that I just am such a big proponent of anything we can possibly do to help our brains to heal. As a brain injury survivor, so many things are outside of our control and we feel so helpless in our recovery. And a big goal of mine on this podcast is to kind of put the power back in your hands, to know there is hope, there is help, and there are things that you can do to help your brain to heal. And one of those things is sleep. But it can also feel impossible when your brain injury is causing you to have troubles with sleep. So it kind of becomes this cycle that Dr. Wilkins is going to talk about yes, we need more sleep for our brain to heal. The better you sleep, the better your body and brain heals. But our injury is causing us to have problems with sleep, so it's kind of this catch-22. And so the next two episodes, we're going to really be exploring what we can do about this and how to help our brains to heal better using the natural power of sleep. So thank you for listening, and I'm excited to introduce Dr. Roy Wilkins to you today. Let's get started. Thanks for being here. I started Hope After Head Injury 10 years ago, and it has grown into a global online support community. You can get involved and check out more of the online resources we have available at hopeafterheadinjury.com. Connect with survivors, caregivers, and family members through our Zoom meetings, our Facebook support group, or the Brain Injury Bible Study group. I remember what it's like to feel so alone with brain injury, and my goal with these groups is for you to know that you are not alone and to be able to connect with others going through similar circumstances. We are in this together. Now, I want to thank you for listening to the podcast and remind you that this podcast is for education and informational purposes only and not intended for medical advice. If you need specific medical advice, please consult your physician. Now, thanks for listening, and let's get on with the show. Today, I am so excited to welcome Dr. Roy Wilkins to Hope Survives podcast. Welcome, Dr. Wilkins.
Thank you. Hi, thank you for allowing me to talk to you. Appreciate it.
Thank you for coming on. So Dr. Wilkins is an expert in sleep medicine, and today we're going to talk all about sleep and the importance of sleep to brain health and how it relates to sleep after brain injury. So to start out, Dr. Wilkins, can you introduce yourself a little bit, share why you're so passionate about sleep?
Okay, I will. Hopefully I can give you the brief synopsis here. By training, I'm a chiropractic neurologist, and I have been exclusively doing sleep medicine for the last almost 20 years, since 2003. So I've been just doing sleep. That's all I do. I used to do general neurology and do all the stuff that the other neurologists would do. But I was involved in an accident years ago. A head-on collision where I was personally had a traumatic brain injury and find myself woke up in the hospital about 4 days later. And it led me to an introduction to some people that tried to encourage me to do sleep. And the more I looked into it, I said, hey, I can do this. And so I was fortunate enough to able to do the American Academy of Sleep Medicine's Waiver B Sleep Fellowship Program. I did that back years ago with a prominent physician that was one of the first in sleep medicine in the nation. And so I felt really really a privilege to be able to do that. And since that time, I've been doing sleep medicine ever since. And I enjoy it. I like it.
That's great. Can you share a little bit on how your traumatic brain injury experience affected you?
The first thing it did, obviously I spent some time in the hospital. I was unconscious for about 4 days. I remember coming to and had no idea where I was. And it was interesting. It was when I had my neuropsych evaluation in the hospital, I did pretty poorly. They tell me later that I scored at a pretty low level, way below my level of education. And of course I did therapy and things in the hospital. And I remember one day the therapist or the doctor came in and I said, I want to go home. I'd been in the hospital for 10 days. I said, let me out of here. I want to go home. And she said, listen, you've got to, we'll see how you do tomorrow when you do your neuropsych evaluation. Let's just see how you do. And so I did that. And then of course that's a several hour procedure. And I remember doing that. And I remember when we got done, the doctor just looked across at me and she just stared at me. And I said, oh no, I flunked, didn't I? And she goes, no. She goes, we don't see this very often. She said, you should be patients like you that have had traumatic injuries like you. She said, they're still in the hospital months, weeks, sometimes longer. She said, I don't know how to explain this. She said, you're back to normal. Now, of course, they released me. I was not back to normal. There were some things that was obviously some residual things that I've noticed. And I actually have some residuals from that head injury. In fact, one of the residuals that I have now is I have a right superior quadrantinopia, which means that this upper field of vision right up here in this upper quadrant, I don't see very well. And so if things are in that plane, I can actually bump my head and not even know that those things are there. So I was left with some residual things from a brain injury, but for the most part, I recovered. And one of the things that obviously at that time that really helped me, interestingly enough, is music. Isn't that crazy? I'm a big country Western fan. I love country music, but I couldn't listen to country music. I couldn't listen to the, hip hop stuff. It just drove me nuts. The thing that calmed me down the most was the classical and hymns, believe it or not. And I would spend hours listening to the hymns. Now, one of the things that occurred in my injury is not only did I have a head injury, but I had fractured my femur, and it was in about 12 pieces. And so it was held together by a rod and stuff. And so I had some other injuries, and I had chest injury and abdominal injury and knee injury and back injury and some other things. But it was really interesting. Mentally, I really, in those initial days, that's what calmed me down the most. That's what soothed me. That's what made me feel at peace, was, interestingly enough, listening to hymns. I couldn't watch TV. It drove me nuts. I couldn't read. I remember trying to read and the words were jumping on the pages, and I couldn't read, but I remember listening to music, and that was awesome. But long story short, as I recovered, I used to rent an office from a gentleman that had a medical supply company. And he said, Dr. Wilkins, he said, we really need someone to do sleep medicine. He goes, we don't have anybody up here to do it. And I said, well, I was trained a little bit in it, but I really don't know that much. And he said, no, you should do it. And so I looked into it and then of course applied for a fellowship and was able to do that and was introduced to some good people and was able to do that. But ever since then, I've just dealt with sleep, and it's been both very rewarding. And of course, it's been very therapeutic for me because I had a brain injury, you know?
Yeah. Wow. Thank you for sharing some of your story. So what year was it that you had your brain injury?
That was back in 98.
Wow.
1998. That was a long time ago.
It's so interesting. I had my traumatic brain injury in 2007. And it's interesting what you said about the neuropsych report and how they would say you're normal, but yet you still have all these problems and effects. And, you know, the way that brain injury medicine has changed over the last even 10, 15 years is incredible. What they can do now as opposed to what they could even do in 2007, because the neuropsych doesn't show everything. You know, it doesn't show that. You might have trouble making decisions on what to get dressed in the morning, or, you know, getting overwhelmed. You know, it's
exactly. Yeah, there were stressful situations that it's like, I can't stand this anymore. I remember I used to be the party person, and not to blow up my own skirt, but I was kind of like the life of the party. And after my brain injury, when we get in large crowds, I could stand it for a while, but after a while, I just like, I can't stand this. I gotta go be by myself. And yeah. So I would just get up and leave. And initially, and prior to my wife understanding what was going on, she was a little bit upset about that and said, you know, it was kind of concerned for me. And I just said, I just can't take this. I have to, I need some alone time. I can't stand these crowds. Now, obviously that's gotten better over the years and things like that. But initially, the things that I used to do, I just couldn't do anymore. And so it really affected my personality and things, which was kind of crazy.
Yeah. I can definitely relate, and I'm sure our listeners can too. And it's so interesting because it's so, I don't want to say subjective, but it's so hard to find any concrete way to explain the way that a brain injury affects you. And I just appreciate you sharing your story with that. And I love hearing about the music. I know this is our first time talking together besides our phone call before this, but I started writing music after my brain injury, and I
really?
Never wrote songs before. Yeah. And
wow.
Music was a huge part of my healing process in my injury. So as you were saying that how much music helped you,
I'm not talented that way to write music. I can listen and I can enjoy, but I'm not talented to write. So that's a special gift you have.
Thank you. It's amazing how the brain can heal over time and recover, and the neuroplasticity that, you know, we can do. So thank you for sharing your story and how you got into sleep medicine and having a traumatic brain injury. Now let's talk about sleep. This was one of the most requested topics after season one. I put out to the listeners, hey, what would you like to hear about in season two? And sleep was one of the highly requested topics from a lot of different people, because after a brain injury, sleep can be affected. Sometimes people find themselves sleeping more and not able to wake up. And then other times people can't sleep and can't get to sleep and can't stay asleep. So today I would love to talk about some of those effects of sleep with brain injury. And I also want to learn about, why is sleep important? What is the importance of sleep on brain health in general? So maybe we could start there and then move into some of the specifics with brain injury.
Sure. One of the things that was discovered years ago is we didn't, in sleep medicine and sleep in general, it wasn't quite sure how the brain eliminated its waste products. We weren't quite sure how that happened. But there were some brilliant scientists and things that were able to show that the brain actually has developed they call it the G lymphatic system. It's like a lymph system. The lymph system in our bodies removes waste products and things, you know, from our different tissues and stuff like that. And then of course it's emptied out. We weren't quite sure how that occurred in the brain, but they found that that occurs in the brain. And interestingly enough, is that certain stages of the brain induce that process better, specifically in what we call slow wave sleep. the brain has actually replenished itself better and is able to remove those waste products during that period of time than in other stages of sleep. The irony of that is that when you have a traumatic brain injury and or you develop different things like insomnia or types of sleep disorder breathing, oftentimes we don't get into that slow wave sleep. And if we do, it's not very long. And so our recovery is not as good. And what patients feel is they just don't feel refreshed in the morning. They just don't feel like I've had a good night's rest, you know? And so that's one of the things that we ask patients is, when you wake up in the morning, do you feel like you had a good night's rest? And if they don't, and if they don't feel like they've had restful sleep, then there's going to be some consequences. And usually those consequences, one of the biggest things that we see is obviously daytime sleepiness. They're going to feel sleepy during the day. And so they're going to want to have a tendency to take multiple naps, or they'll fall asleep doing monotonous things, you know, listening to a conversation, maybe listening to this podcast, and they'll, you know, fall asleep. And so those things, and so we screen for those things and see if those patients have those things. And then if they do, then obviously we know that sleep's been disrupted. And that can be for a variety of reasons. Obviously, in a traumatic brain injury, initially there's an inflammatory process. And then, of course, there's oftentimes one of the most common complaints that patients have that with brain injuries is they have a headache, they have pain. And anytime that you have pain, it stimulates the nervous system to wake you up. And you have to be able to sleep, if you will, in order to have that restorative process for your body. And if you don't sleep, your pain threshold is not going to improve. You're going to continue to have pain. So that's one of the first things that that obviously has to be addressed. Now, depending on the severity of the injury and things like that, you may be given medication. And of course, in my case, you know, I was, you know, I had broken bones and things. So they gave me some pretty heavy duty stuff. And back in those days, I remember my orthopedic surgeon told me, he said, just call and we'll give you whatever you need. Nowadays, they don't do that. Nowadays, you have to see your doctor before you get another script for a narcotic. But I was hurt pretty bad. And so I slept a lot. The irony of that is that medication that we give patients for sleep, whether it's narcotics or sleep hypnotics or whatever, or benzodiazepines, whatever, they don't restore all the different stages of sleep. They may improve one aspect of sleep, but they don't improve another. It's not uncommon, for example, antidepressants to suppress REM sleep. And while REM sleep may not be the type of sleep that you need to be refreshed, we know that REM sleep is important to solidify memories and things like that. And if you don't get that, your memory and things is going to be shot. Your short-term memory is going to be about that big. And so we have to have all the stages of sleep. And unfortunately, pharmaceuticals don't do that very good. We have to deal with other things and look at what's going on here that's interrupting our sleep. Is it pain? Obviously, that needs to be dealt with. And is it a psychiatric disorder? Is it insomnia? Is it sleep disordered breathing? Or do you have a change in your circadian cycle? You've totally thrown off your sleep-wake cycle, and now you're trying to sleep when it's not your time to sleep. And that those things just don't work. And so we see these different things. And so my job is to evaluate these patients and to try to figure out what category do you fit into and what do we need to do to affect your sleep. Obviously, the most of the things that we see, because I run a sleep lab, is we see a lot of sleep disorder breathing. But one of the things that's really interesting is in traumatic brain injuries they found in veterans is that if you have developed some type of sleep disorder breathing, one of the things that occurs is it's not uncommon for you to wake up gasping and choking. And when that happens, it creates an arousal process, wakes you up, creates kicking in of the sympathetic neurons and things like that. That can trigger a post-traumatic event. That can trigger those experiences, those traumatic experiences that they've had, whether they've been in military or everyday life, or the things that go on that we see. And so we know that that's a triggering factor, and that's something that needs to be addressed. And so that's what we do. We address those things.
That's such great information. So you mentioned some breathing. How is sleep related to the autonomic system? Because I know that autonomics can be affected after brain injury and concussion. And
absolutely.
So how if there's some issues with the autonomic system, how does that affect sleep?
Well, what happens is when we go into the different stages of sleep, our autonomic system turns on and turns off. And what's interesting is that if that's not working right, your ability to maybe get to sleep might be okay, but your ability to stay asleep might be compromised, and you might start waking up. You may only sleep for 2-3 hours and then you wake up. Or in some patients, they just have a hard time getting to sleep. So everybody is very individualized, but it disrupts their sleep patterns somehow. And so we try to get that to restore the way it's supposed to. And that's a common complaint that we see. And of course, during the daytime, these people have everything from, you know, POTS disease to whatever. And that creates a problem. What's really interesting is that if we can restore sleep, oftentimes these things kind of take care of themselves, which is really cool. If the natural process is allowed to do its job, the body can heal, and the body kind of takes care of itself. Now, not always, but so many times over and over and over, I've seen this where once we restore sleep, it's amazing how the people feel. And they say, I haven't felt like this in years. And it doesn't matter whether it's a traumatic brain injury or some other process, but they feel so much better. And it's so important that they sleep. And unfortunately, what you have to remember, sleep medicine is a new specialty. It's only been around since the late 70s. You know, we've had all these other specialties for a long time. The first board certification in sleep medicine was 1978, you know, and so that was a long time. That was, you know, a few years ago, but in relative terms, that's an infant compared to some of these other specialties, you know. We don't really know that much about, we're still learning about sleep, and we're going, oh my gosh, this affects sleep. And so we're constantly learning, and we don't have all the answers, and we're learning just like everybody else, but it's so cool that once you can restore the sleep, you just do so much better. And that's what I found.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that. So how would somebody go about restoring sleep if they're listening and they're thinking, man, I have problems with sleep after my brain injury, but I don't even know where to start?
Exactly. Fortunately, there's been a big push in medical education, and it started probably about 20 years ago they're starting to teach medical students and whatever, chiropractic students, osteopathic students, whatever, about sleep in their early part of their training. And so they're beginning to focus that, you know, this is a necessary process that the body has. And so they're beginning to teach them about how do you identify these things? What kind of questions do you need to ask? So traditionally speaking, all of my patients come by referral, and they're referred by their primary care practitioners, whether that's a family doctor, a nurse practitioner, a PA, you know, a specialist or whatever, but they're all of our patients are by referral. And in their history and physical, they've obviously picked up on something that they realize is not working. So we follow that up with what we call a sleep questionnaire. And then we specifically ask about sleep. So one of the big screening tools that is required now by insurance companies is they want to see, for example, an Epworth sleepiness scale. Do you have excessive daytime sleepiness? In the military, they use the stop bang questionnaire. I don't know if you've ever heard of that. And those questionnaires basically are assessing your levels of daytime sleepiness. And if you have daytime sleepiness, that's a pretty good bet that you're not sleeping at night. Okay. Now, there's various causes for that. But then we question those patients and we do an exam and things, and we say, okay, what category is this falling into? Is this some type of sleep disorder breathing, such as sleep apnea? Or is it a circadian rhythm problem, such as they're out of sync with their sleep-wake cycle? Is it some sort of parasomnia, or insomnia, where they're waking up maybe in an early morning hour, and that may be attributed to their traumatic brain injury or whatever? The most common thing, about a third of Americans have insomnia. Whether they have traumatic brain injuries or not, that's a lot of people. Now, sleep disorder breathing is, if you look at the population as a whole, it's about 4 to 6% have some type of sleep disorder breathing. As we get older, that percentage increases. So as we get up to that Medicare age, we see a high percentage, probably over 40% of patients that have that. And obviously, physical conditioning and weight and things like that have an important element in that. In fact, for sleep disorder breathing, the number one risk factor is, are you obese? Are you overweight? If you are, then that increases the likelihood of sleep disorder breathing. But the number two risk factor is, what's your age? Are you over 50? And we used to say 40, but now we say 50. The older we get, our tissue is not as elastic as it used to be. And so we begin to sag. Well, you know, you can see my face and things. It begins to sag a little bit. And of course, our airways do the same thing. And so we see more of these things. But it just kind of depends. And once we send these patients a questionnaire and we question them just a little bit more, maybe than their primary care practitioner, we can kind of gear them towards what is the next step? Do we need to do some type of cognitive behavioral therapy? Or do we actually need to do a sleep study on you and evaluate you? Or do we need to just change some personal habits that you have at home? And so it's everybody is a little bit different. That sleep questionnaire kind of helps to guide us in that thing. And the questions that we ask is, let me see if I can remember them. Do you snore? Do you snore loudly? If you do, you got about a 60-80% chance of having sleep apnea. Do you wake up gasping or choking? Do you ever have head and neck sweats at night? Well, autonomic dysfunction that we see in traumatic brain injuries, we see that all the time, where they have autonomic manifestations such as sweating in their head and neck and things like that, and may occur at nighttime. Do they move a lot in bed? Or in other words, do you fall asleep and you wake up in the same position? Or are you constantly tossing and turning? If you're constantly tossing and turning, that's a dead giveaway that something's not right. Something's just not right and that needs to be evaluated. Do you wake up with morning headaches? For example, if you have sleep disorder breathing, we know that every apneic episode, your oxygen level is going to drop and your carbon dioxide level is going to rise. When that occurs, that's going to affect the blood vessels in your head. And so if you have a precondition such as a traumatic brain injury, and you might be kind of suffering from this anyway, it's just going to make it worse. So we have very effective treatments for those things, but we got to figure out which kind of category they're in. Are we dealing with a sleep-wake disorder? Are we dealing with a breathing disorder? Are we dealing with some sort of what we call parasomnia? Parasomnias are abnormal things that occur in the night, like, for example, nightmares and things like that. And patients that have post-traumatic stress syndrome, oftentimes after TBIs, sometimes they'll develop things like parasomnias and things like that. And so we try to address those things. And if we can take care of the basics, then these people do better and they do amazingly well. And for example, in insomnia, which I mentioned before, a third of Americans have insomnia. Insomnia, the recommendation is before any medication. It's really sad because most people that have insomnia, the first thing their provider will do is throw some medication at you. And that's probably not the wisest thing to do. The treatment of choice, or the number one treatment, is some type of cognitive behavioral therapy. I tell patients all the time that have like insomnia and things like that, I say, you know what? I can't force you to sleep, but I can sure make you want to sleep. And we do that by various tricks. For example, we don't let them take naps during the day. We eliminate caffeine at certain parts of the day. Sometimes we sleep deprive them as a therapy, and we do that. So we use these natural things which can affect the normal physiological process. And if we can balance those things together, then the body just kind of takes care of itself and it heals so much better, so much better. So, sorry, I'm rambling on. I'm sorry.
No, it's great information. Thank you. Do not apologize. That's what you're here for.
Okay.
It's all really wonderful. I really appreciate you sharing those details, and especially understanding that if there is a problem with sleep, there's probably some other sort of root cause is what I'm hearing. So yes. Not everyone's going to have the same cause, but they might have this. They might all say they have trouble sleeping, but they might all have different reasons behind it. And so it's really important to find why you specifically are having trouble sleeping. I hope that you enjoyed today's episode on sleep with Dr. Wilkins. Now, subscribe and stay tuned because part two is coming next week, where we're going to talk about how to sleep better and improve your health and some specifics as far as suggestions on what can help you to improve your sleep. Thanks so much for being here. And remember, there's always hope.